Whether you're a Class 5 rafter or just looking for a couple of laughs, these two have you covered. Welcome to Aaron and Zach's Better Than Mediocre Rafting Show.
Well, it's Friday, and that means we're back with Aaron and Zach's Mediocre Rafting Show. And we do this every Friday, and we have our guest today, Dr. Vladimir Gavrilov. Vlad, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Vlad,
can you hear me? Oh, I think Steve's even here, too.
Oh, yes.
There's Steve. There's four of us.
Vlad, wow. Good to see you.
Now, Vlad and I talked earlier, his internet connection wasn't great, but he's a critical part of the show, so he's going to chime in when he can.
I'm happy to see me.
I don't see Steve.
Vladimir,
Vlad, where are you?
Critical part.
This is going to be a hard show because there's a lot of us, but we'll do our best not to talk over each other. I'll do the intro and we'll get going. Welcome to our show. If you're listening to this on River Talk Podcast, stop listening. Go to YouTube and watch the show on YouTube. The video is critical for the show, especially this show. Please like and subscribe. And with that, Vladimir, we're going to get going. And hi, Steve. Good to see you. We have this that a viewer sent us. Steve, have you seen this yet?
No.
So this is, we were talking about whether it's better to flip a raft on the raft or from shore.
Beautiful.
And I'm not sure which case he's making here, whether it's better to flip it from raft to shore.
Isn't that clear?
No.
I see some, variations because in first case, you can play with angle. When you pull, you can change angle. You can make this angle bigger or smaller. But if you will make it bigger, it will be closer to second. And at the same time, you don't add any weight on a raft that you rotate.
I think, doesn't it make sense a bigger angle is better? You guys with me on that?
Yes.
Yeah. It applies more force. Because you need force.
Big angle, of course, because for torque, you need to multiply pulling force by sine of this angle.
Yep, yep. And so I think he's calling it the he's using moment here, which is the same as torque. And I think it's the distance from one tube to the other tube multiplied by the vertical force, which is the sine of the angle, basically. So I don't know if it's calculations
of rotation. Yes.
But our goal would be a larger vertical angle. That would make it more likely to flip. And Vlad's, and so when you're standing on it, you have a bigger angle, ideally, than just on shore next to it. But Vlad's point was you could possibly stand on a rock, stand on a hill, and make the angle larger.
What? Opposite torque because of your own weight or weight of two that it's pulling. Of course, it's smaller
radius.
You can make
the weight of the person that's pulling zero.
Say that again, Steve.
I think you can make the weight of the person that is
if
pulling
it's zero,
really, really close to zero.
Yeah, I think they're standing on the raft. You're talking
standing on a different part of the tube.
Yeah, that was my first comment about this is like when I stand on, I try to hit that balance point in the middle of the tube, you know, the circular tube. Like I don't stand on the front of it where it comes up. Or I get stand as far back, almost on the outside of it. Mm-hmm. Right, Steve?
Right. And you I think if you stand on the far back, you are actually increasing. Yeah, your feet would actually be increasing
you're
that torque.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. Your rotation kind of is it. On the center line of that left-hand tube in these drawings, right?
So that's so
you're rotating around that
yeah
center line. And if your feet are on the outside of that, you're going to add to the Torque, which you would never get that.
Pushing it back down. Yeah, yeah,
it's many variables. You never get that advantage from pulling from shore.
Of course. Don't forget about friction on a tube that is close to shore. Friction because it has contact with rocks on the shore or sand or something. And it's playing not in your favor.
I think we can all agree. Well, so first of all, when you're on the raft, you're not pulling on the rope, you're leaning back. So it does depend on the mass of all the people. Right? So where if you're on shore, you can pull more people on the rope and increase the force on the rope by more people. Or if you needed to, mechanical advantage. So you have a maximum force you can get standing on the boat. That's a limitation. But I think we all...
You just add more people on the boat.
Excellent like situation would be if you have, for example, big tree close to the raft and put pulley there. And pull just rope down and play with angle. Have angle closer to 90 degrees when sine will be equal one. And all your force will be, yeah.
To finish up this discussion, I think we've argued about whether it's better to flip from shore or the rafts. I'm with you guys. I would rather flip on the raft. I think we've debated this forever. I think there's a lot of variables that go into it. And that angle is this is being treated as a statics problem when it's actually a dynamics problem because the boat's moving. So that angle is constantly changing. But I think the flipping from the raft is a little bit better.
Your angle pull kind of stays the same though, because it's rotating together almost.
And very much it will depend on distribution of load on the raft.
Aaron, you have a drawing for us?
I'm really proud of this little drawing here. See that?
Okay.
You can't see the drawing. Basically, the guy's legs are pushing the bottom.
Yeah. I like Aaron's drawing. Now I can see it.
Yeah. Okay, I see it. Yeah.
So he's pulling on the rope, but his legs are pushing the other way. And I think that's the key part for flipping the boat when you're standing on it. And it's great about our discussion is you've got to get your weight on the outside of the tube you're standing on. If you're on the inside or on top, it doesn't work nearly as well as you get your weight on the outside. And you're almost pushing that bottom tube out and away as you're pulling the top tube towards you.
And I think you have to climb that rope.
Yeah, you climb the rope. Yeah, exactly. But you also lean back into it a lot too, right? You lean back. Yeah. And then as you lean back farther, then you're pushing that bottom tube over more and that's a key component of it. And then the other thing, Zach, I thought that was a good thing on the video, can you bring it back up, Zach?
Yeah.
Instead of having all of our faces here. Thanks. The other thing that I think is really nice though, is like understand the importance of, if you are pulling from shore, it's getting up higher. It's going to be easier to flip that boat over than if you're pulling from the shoreline. That's one of the big problems from flipping over on shore. Is you just don't have the angle.
Let's add one more variable to this.
Yeah.
The red line. Am I going to get any more advantage if I wrap that line around the outside of the tube that I'm pulling against? Like if I hook to the D-rings on the outside, is it different than pulling from the floor? If I hook all the way underneath it to the other tube, to the tube I'm standing on,
yeah.
Are there any advantages in doing that?
You want to go to the outside D-rings. If you do the floor, there's a disadvantage because you're the distance from where the force is being applied to the pivot point decreases. So you want the distance to that pivot point to increase. The pivot point isn't going to go farther than where it is on that diagram now.
Than the furthest outside point.
Yeah.
So Zach's talking about making a longer moment arm, basically.
Yeah.
So
the longest moment arm you're going to get is if the line is where it is. You're not going to make a longer moment arm by wrapping it
underneath. Now, but Steve has a great question. If you go all the way underneath and go back to the tube that you'd be standing on, would that help pull that tube out more?
Didn't they make that like when they made the catapult, they added that other thing, the trebuchet.
Yeah. This is different though.
That whipped it.
Yeah, but they do that a lot. They talk about that a lot with canoeing. You go to the bottom, and then you kind of roll it over as you pull it off. Yeah.
I don't think that's going to help.
I'm going to be a proponent of the trebuchet flip.
It's going to pull that one.
It's going to catch on.
I mean, I could see once it's up a bit, how it, like, when it's almost vertical, it'll go, yeah. Bam!
Yeah.
You can see that, but, like, you and have to get the rope under the boat, which is a huge pain.
No, yeah. Not a pain.
And it's not just one rope, it's a bunch of ropes. Because if you're standing on it, it's not just one person's rope, it's three or four people's different ropes.
I feel like that advantage is more if you're flipping it on shore to help pull it off of shore, but I don't know if it actually would work. That would be interesting. This is a, yeah.
Oh, it might work. Oh, on shore. That's interesting. Versus yeah. In the water. We should try it. Huh? I'll have to try it. Makes it work. How does the person's weight become negative? Like,
Rosenfeld told
it's healthy.
For only one purpose, to put theory on the right place. Therefore, you have to do experiment.
I'll do an experiment.
Standing on the outside of the tube creates the log rolling effect on that tube that I think is significant.
You can do it even on, empty raft, but use different situation and measure this force.
It's not going to increase the force. The force will be the same. But I think once it's vertical,
it might
bring the bottom out, which is maybe an advantage to it.
Disagree. Like,
the force won't change.
Yeah, the force. I agree, Zach, with Zach.
The force would change because Zach, if you didn't have the rope, if you don't have the rope and you stand on the outside edge of an upside down raft,
uh-huh.
Don't you think the other side is going to come up off of the water?
Wait, what?
Yeah.
So you're adding some force to it by standing on the outside of the rope. So
yeah,
the
force
would be different. Standing on it, yes, but not the attaching the rope back to it.
Attaching the rope isn't going to add force. It's like that way. In that case, the tube is acting like a pulley. There's the tension's the same in the rope the whole way. But the interesting thing to me is
tension's the same on the rope the whole way. Yes, your feet add the force.
Your feet are.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I didn't. Regardless of where you attach it.
Yeah.
Your weight will decrease vertical component of the force. It's definitely. For how much it depends. And all this situation is very fluid because, you know, raft is not static, you are not static, and all this stuff, it's not so simple like it looks on the picture.
Yeah, I agree. Being treated as a statics problem when it's really a dynamics problem. It's actually,
but I think that, but
you need
I think
calculus to really do it all because
oh, jeez. I think there's a lot that can be taken from these images and the calculations. So it's like how much force, like we talked about, the angle pull is a big one. Where you're standing on the tube is a big one. I think there's some takeaways from this that are applicable. The exact force, how much force it takes, that's really challenging to calculate for sure. And like none of us are
like which way it's hard to calculate which way is better than the other in terms of what applies more force, but. Yeah, you're right. Like where you stand is important. And knowing that increasing the angle is going to help, I think that's important too. Yeah. All right, guys. I have a video to share today. And just so that I know, Steve, do you have a Steve's corner for us?
Yeah, a mental angle.
A mental angle?
Yes.
Okay. We're going to do a video first. And then we're going to go mental angle. How does that sound?
Great.
I got to figure out how to get to our... Give me a second here.
When are we gonna have six people? What's the maximum number of people we can have on at once with this program?
I don't know. We should find out.
And we can all start talking at the same time. I really want to do that. So then we all like.
It's really hard with four people. We did four people before. We have this video that Vlad sent me from the Argut River in Siberia, and Vlad has been in the Argut River.
Yeah.
Oh, Vlad, your audio is awful. Your internet's having problems. But this is
not back when Vlad was rafting there, is it?
This is not of Vlad. These are people that came after Vlad. Okay. Am I right, Vlad? I think this here is historic.
I don't know these people. I met them maybe, but yes. And I never use this kind of... this guy from Siberia, and they're much tougher than me.
Well, you're pretty tough, lad.
What?
So the river here is the Argut.
Not
that
now.
Vlad is done. Right, Vlad?
This isn't the Argut here, though.
But not this 5 kilometers or 6 kilometers.
Yeah. So there's a 5 kilometer section in Argut that Vlad portaged.
Good choice, and Vlad.
These guys are going to run this 5 to 6 mile section that Vlad portaged.
Are these... Not miles, kilometers.
Kilometers, sorry. I forget that we're not
in Siberia. Siberia.
I forget you guys use the metric system.
This is like that's basically like a creature craft, huh?
The creature craft was inspired by those boats.
This is so cold.
What do you call that in Russia, Vlad?
So-called bublik. It's meant in Siberia, and they use it for such kind of rivers. I never used it.
Oh. That doesn't look good.
Oh, man.
Vladimir, doesn't bublik, isn't that mean donut or bagel in Russian?
Bublik, it's Russian kind of donut. Yes, it is kind of bagel with big hole in the middle. Yeah, and you can buy it in any bread store, and Russ love to you to eat it with tea.
Vlad, is this footage we're watching now? Is this the Argut or somewhere else?
It is Argut.
This is Argut. Okay, that's Argut right there.
Some Samson kills. I'm not sure, but it looks like maybe Upper Chulishman or Rapid Kasha porridge on Chulishman. Maybe. I am not sure. They did not talk about this. They just included it in video.
And here, those are the logs for the frame. Is that right? Like what that guy was carrying?
Yes.
Oh, geez. And that's your favorite kind of craft. Oh,
Siberian trips, they always use...
This is
a catamaran, but I don't know. Not cats that we use, and it is plot.
A plot's like a sweep boat, but there's popular. Two people on each sweep arm.
Ouch.
Yeah, because it's different water. It's not middle fork.
Vlad, so what is the Kerrigan breakthrough?
That's gorge with very steep slopes as banks, and it's about maybe 5-6 kilometers long. If you do portage on the road, and you have to do it because if you come too close to this breakthrough, you have to climb with your stuff almost vertically, and nobody will do it. We stop, but let's say half miles before this breakthrough, and there is road on the right side and of Vlad, the river.
What are we looking at here?
System of rapids. I can tell you that I did not scout it in details, but when you look at it from the top, I would not recommend anybody to run it unless you are inside.
Unless you're wet blind?
And so unfortunately, such people exist, and last probably 30 years, it's a bunch of people who died there.
In the breakthrough?
Yes. Even using this crazy bublik raft.
Vlad, so you don't like the bublik?
Bublik has, some advantages. Personally, not. But it is, again, it is my opinion. Maybe I am wrong. It was invented just for these crazy rivers. How some people call this breakthrough 6+ cascade of rapids. And
oh, and flat.
Even among these guys, yes.
Oh,
what's that?
This is hard to watch.
Do you think a creature craft could do this?
Yeah. Oh, that's a creature crafter.
I wonder if Bill would call this class two plop and drop.
Oh, that's a nasty swim that dude's getting. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, it does not stop.
Oh, yeah, just go back to the footage. Man, that's rough.
Yeah. The problem with this breakthrough that you don't have pools between rapids. It's one big rapid.
Uh-huh.
Even some people consider, let's say, kilometer 2 through 4 the most difficult. I cannot say it looking at this cascade from the top.
Uh-huh.
Doesn't seem like scouting would be that helpful. Sorry.
Where are you?
I mean, oh man. You'd want to know there's no wood in there. That's what I worry about with creature crafts. Is that
no, it's forest. Wood. You can find wood.
Oh, yeah.
Wood is not a problem.
Super bubla.
Big problem of this cascade is big, even in normal water volume, it's about when we run river, it was about 11,000 CFS, and in breakthrough, it's gradient about feet per mile. Combine these two things, understand why it is. You know, decide when you run it.
It's funny watching them run class six and then hang out in camp playing guitar. Vlad, that big thing that we just saw, what was that called?
Which one?
The red, white, and blue thing.
Super bubla.
Ah, that's, you know, a guy, I think he's from Moscow, And he is running some crazy rivers like in Guri, in Caucasus, as I know, this one, and Majoy, and his last name, Lagoda, Sergei Lagoda, yes. And that's his design. They call it Tibet because he designed it to run rivers in Himalaya, like okay. Brahmaputra, upstream, Ganga upstream, something like this. But this boat does not work for this break. It's stuck.
It got stuck
between rocks, and you cannot in the middle of the. Needs use, you know, mountaineers equipment to get people to the shore.
Oh, look, they have GoPros.
This craft was too big.
Oh, I wonder if that's fun.
You know, people write that it is impossible for kayakers to run it, but only with last year's progress in kayak and increasing in skills of kayakers, I think it's a question of time when kayakers will run it.
Is it better to be on the front or the back?
I didn't know there was a front or a back.
Steve, I think I saw an art of paddle.
It doesn't matter, I think.
The paddles had green blades. It was a white paddle with green blades. I think they stole an art of paddle. This looks like, now they're looking at video from the 60s.
Zach, I watched this video and it was normal quality without this jumping.
Yeah, that's because Vlad, we're seeing it. What's wrong? Just because we're in StreamYard. Everyone else can see it fine. We just can't see it fine.
It's your internet quality, Vlad. Your internet isn't doing too well today. Now I feel like I've seen this video before.
Yeah.
I feel like this is a well-known piece of video the people have shown.
You have several videos about this and some pretty good quality. If you want, I can try to find them.
That was funny.
I don't know. Of course, it is crazy and scary. But I definitely don't want to go there.
You don't want to go, Vlad? We're not going to go there for vacation next year?
No. When I was much younger, it was 32 years ago, when good, you know, we just look and we peacefully carry all our stuff around 7 kilometers.
Because
5 miles.
And there was a road, Vlad, you said. You could just take out, get on a road, walk the road, and put back in.
Yes, but it is a road without any cars or trucks. You can sit on this road and wait for my tractor like months. It's dirt road in forest. Don't forget, it is not United States.
So no turn signals? I don't think he's following the clean land principle.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
Is this old footage or is this recent footage? When is this from?
He's trying to push it. 20 years ago.
30 years ago?
Somewhere around 2000, yeah.
I think that's the same place we've seen video of this happening, but this is not the same video. Because I don't remember seeing any of this. I think other people have gotten stuck there in that exact same spot and shared their video. I think this is different. That's just what you do when you do this run. You get stuck there.
Actually, 20 years ago, it was officially first that registered by Russian Rafting Federation, like first descent of Karagem Breakthrough.
Say again, this is the first descent?
It's some, rumors that two guys from here, they passed it in 1993, but they did not provide any photo and video materials. Therefore, they did not get this to be first in 1993.
So in Russia, Vlad, or in the Soviet Union, did you have to take video and photos when you did expeditions?
Yes, to provide proof that you really did this river, that you run it successfully.
And who do you give the photos and videos to prove it? Do you just have to leave it at home, or is there a place you
send
it?
Our own. No, you run rapid and one or two persons from your group, they're taking pictures from the shore.
No, what I'm asking about is when you're done with the trip, who do you share the photos and videos with? Is it like a homework assignment where you turn in the photos to prove that you did it?
It was system in Federation or Rafting Club. It was special group, we call it Qualification Commission, that accept all the stuff in form of report with description of all rapids and supportive video and photo materials, and they decided to accept it as running this river or not. Very similar, like mountaineers or alpinists. They go and they live on the top of mountain. On summit, they leave note with information and data of the group that they were there. You understand that wind cannot bring this note on the Everest.
What's that? They're tying the... Is that bicycle tires? But how do they... The wood they're tying together, what are they tying it together with?
Possibly they use to connect this wooden elements of wooden frame. They use rubber bands, or maybe they use bicycle tires. Again, I cannot tell you it's exactly because I was not in this group.
Is this the same, the breakthrough as well, Vlad, this video? Or are we somewhere else?
Sorry.
Is this video of the breakthrough right here, or did we move somewhere else?
Yes. I don't know. It is just video. I accidentally found it, and it's not my video. You understand? Yeah. Actually, leader of this group, he's very known on in our region, TV and video, and photojournalist. I saw his book with photos of Altai region. It's pretty good, and you can buy it in Altai. He's living in Barnaul, it is, main city of Altai region. Sasha Pustovarov.
Well, this video is, we're almost done. Whoa, geez. Yeah, just a normal day of running class six. All right. Well, you guys ready?
I have a question for Vlad.
Yeah.
It's interesting because, Vlad, your early boating was done in Russia. Your later in life boating was done in the United States.
Soviet Union.
Soviet Union.
Soviet Union. Yeah, yeah.
Were there things that you did in the Soviet Union that you brought to the United States? Like, are there techniques or equipment that were common in the Soviet Union that maybe didn't exist or came later in the United States?
I brought a couple cats here. When you sit on your knees, Zach, use it with me.
Yeah, there.
And yep, Zach, you know how easy to run this boat. It still does not exist here in the United States. You heard this plastic one, like two PVC kayaks connected with metal frame, but it was like Volution or something like this. I don't remember. Probably Volution? You remember. But it was heavy and not so maneuverable like Russian cat.
Okay. Are you talking about the four-person cat or the two-person cat, Vlad?
Both.
He's talking about, I think what he's saying was there's one catamaran with like hard plastic tubes, which he didn't like. He called that pollution.
That we had here in the U.S. Yeah.
What's a shredder?
A paddle cat.
With inflatable tubes or hard tubes, or is that what you're talking about?
A shredder is like a paddle cat, where there's like a, you sit in between, there's like a, it's like a half raft, half cat. And there's a little space in the middle to sit into and paddle, and you sit on the tubes like a raft. A catamaran, like Vlad uses, you kneel on the tubes and there's straps over your legs.
Oh, yeah.
If it flips you, they're not going to, it's not the safest thing according to like some standards. But if you don't want to fall out, you kind of want to strap your knees in. And if you flip, you do fall out, but you do have these dangly straps around. Vlad, do you remember what you called
it? I disagree with that. Standards, because these standards are written by people who don't understand anything. Wait, as a rule, all standards come from bureaucracy, crafting bureaucracy, you know, financial bureaucracy, and it's always bad.
Wait, what standards are you talking about, Vlad?
I just dislike bureaucracy in any appearances.
Hey, Vlad, this isn't a political show.
What did you say?
This is not a political show. This is a rapping show.
I agree with you. I am silent.
Vladimir, do you remember what you call the cataract with oars the first time you saw it? Vladimir, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, maybe. Do you know the cataract when you saw a cataract of the oars? Do you remember what you called it?
I don't want to go to politics.
Zach, are you going to tell us what he called it?
I'll tell you in the after show. I'll tell you when we're done. Aaron's sharing the shredder with us.
Yeah, I didn't know they had a four-man shredder.
Oh, wow. I've never even seen it.
Yeah. So here's the shredder, Steve.
Okay, but I've seen that same craft, but with hard shell tubes, basically, whatever you want to call those, with hard pontoons.
Mm-hmm. Do you kneel on it or do you sit in between? Which one?
Bublik.
You would, I think the people I saw, they weren't sitting in it like a kayak, like it wasn't two outrigger kayaks. They were sitting on it, straddling the hard plastic tube. I just didn't know if that had a different name.
I think it's a catamaran.
I think I've seen these.
Let me see if I can find it here. There's some new ones made by a company that starts with a Z. But I can't find it here.
Okay.
Now I just found an article. Aaron, can I share some stuff now?
Yeah, go for it. You do what you want to do. Yeah.
I just found an article that I wrote about, or that Vlad wrote about the catamaran. This is one that Vlad wrote showing like people catamaraning. There's Vlad.
I've never paddled one. I've only seen them.
Speak to the people on Ptolemy.
They do not look that comfortable.
About this.
Here's the photo from the Ptolemy. This is from Clavey Falls, right, Vlad?
This is from it's Clavey Falls. It's Martin. Actually, it's people who don't have much experience. Some of them first time sitting on, and no, it's very effective move, but they did not flip, did not have any problems.
Well, you could put six people on that thing.
It was about what?
Aaron, do you see that seat right there?
Yeah, you two more seats.
It was about five. Yes, because when I brought this stuff here, actually it was order from Corky. See if you remember him, of course, right?
Corky, yeah.
Sibak, director. Corky Collier.
Yeah.
Yes,
I don't think Steve's
and he wanted to use it as commercial, and we made it for six people, four people with people and two people like passengers. But it was a bad idea, I can say.
Vlad, is that your red helmet? Are you the one buried in the water in the bottom of the picture?
No, I was not there. I took this picture. Can be my helmet?
Aaron, that's Martin Wong on the front left.
Yeah, totally. The
name of this guy is Matt, but it's friend of Martin.
These are the ones I've seen before. Zelgir. How did you just shared it with us? Oh, man.
Oh, wow.
These are the ones I've seen recently.
Found these pictures. I did not see them published. What is that?
Zelgir?
What is the source of these pictures? Yes.
The pictures of your cat or these pictures now we're looking at now, Vlad?
Pictures of cats, yes, because I see one picture from Akishma there, Akishma River, that I definitely did not publish anything on the internet or
Vlad, you sent them to me for you wrote that article. I published them for you.
When we wanted to sell Akishma trip, right?
Yeah.
Maybe.
I'm promoting your book right here. There's an ad for your book. This is a picture, remember, from the Kakem. And then this is
Bachem.
Yeah. So I'm hearing is that Zach is using your material without getting your permission.
Oh, look, Vlad's the author. Here. Vlad, you wrote this. Look, there's Vlad. He's the author of this article. All right. Well, just to move things on, Vladimir, we're going to start a new segment of the show. Are you guys ready for the next segment of our show?
Yeah, let's do it.
Vlad, watch the intro so you know what we're getting into.
It's time for The Mental Angle, featuring Steve Welch. In this segment, Steve helps us approach the mental game of guiding, trip leading, and running white water. Let's all give Steve a big welcome.
Yeah, Steve.
Thank you. So we're going to follow up on last week's episode. I want to make this more of a discussion, so you guys chip in here when you're when you feel like it. I was worried about Zach not wanting to be that guy on his river trips where he has to step in and say something.
Not on my river trips when I'm private boating.
When he's private boating.
Okay.
And so we're going to go to try and avoid having to put you in that situation.
Okay.
And I want to introduce a ratio to the mental angle that will complement the 3-to-1 ratio that we have for setting up a mechanical advantage system for pulling a raft off. We're going to have a mental advantage system for avoiding that situation. I mean, it's a 1-to-10 ratio.
1-to-10.
My theory is that for every 1 minute of prevention that you invest, you save 10 minutes of recovery. And we can apply that to actual preparing your boat to go rafting, tying in your spare oar, 1 minute of time spending in your tying in your spare oar might save you 10 minutes of getting unstuck off of a rock. 1 minute of group check-in at the beginning of a trip might save you 10 minutes of group discussion later on in the trip.
Okay, can I butt in right now?
Yes, please.
A couple comments on that.
Yes.
One, people's efficiencies are not all the same. So what might take me a minute might take Dougie 5 minutes.
Wonderful point.
And I also want to be like, I've been on trips where we can't, we're going to run out of time. We can't dilly-dally too much. Like, time is a commodity.
I agree with Steve on all of this. I don't understand, Zach. You're just not wanting to have a little powwow before you go, a 1 minute conversation before you get on the river to save you time so you do get the takeout in a timely manner.
You guys are okay. You're talking about go slow to go fast.
Yes.
I am with you. But there's going Knowles level slow, which can get in the problem of finishing a trip.
Absolutely.
There's like a diminishing return on it too, for sure. Like taking a minute to tie in your oar will save you 10 minutes. Taking 10 minutes to tie in your oar does not save you 100 minutes.
Correct. Thank you. Good. Yeah. Well, we don't need to save 100 minutes.
No, but I think that's Zach's problem is with the
taking 10 minutes to tie in your oar is 10 minutes of your 3 hours of water, which if there's a wrap later could cost you a whole day. So I think there's like, 1 minute prevention doesn't save 10
like
minutes.
I think the 1 minute of prevention or the 1 unit of prevention and saving you the 10 units of recovery would mean that if we're going to drive that line straight through, the 1 minute would mean you're not going to wrap. Those are two separate incidents. You're combining two things. That means you would have had to invest another minute in something else to keep from wrapping and getting stuck. But I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. Okay. What did you study in undergraduate school?
Mechanical engineering.
And what did you study in graduate school?
Mechanical engineering.
It's wonderful. And those are really, really valuable things. And the way you approach life can maybe be on the more analytical, scientific, numerical level. The mental angle, we have to get rid of all of that. You have to realize that
we're going to
be using looser numbers and looser adjectives and verbs and stuff that's not math.
Okay, so you said, I wrote it down right here. 1 minute of prevention, you can't see it, saves me 10 minutes.
Of recovery.
So you're saying of recovery. I got to write that
down. Proposing that.
I'm taking notes. And I'm saying, really? And you're saying, actually, that's just a made up thing. Just don't read too much about the numbers.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. It's the concept. It's a concept. It's the difference between mechanical engineering and German, which is what I got my degree in.
Well, German should be the same, isn't it? Aren't the Germans like just like everything has a rule, the language is
liberal arts department and we're the science department. I mean, you need to step into the liberal arts department for just these brief moments during your show. Okay?
Okay.
And we'll just sort of accept this 1-to-10 ratio as our beginning point. Here's my suggestion that it's the 10 unit. Let's not just call them time. This is also energy, and this is also frustration. And this is also just all of the non-tangible things that occur on a day on the river. Perhaps, and that's that 10 unit moment of having to be that guy that we want to avoid. We don't want to put you in that situation. And I'm suggesting that perhaps 1 minute of being 1/10 of that guy at a different time in the trip, maybe at the beginning, maybe at put in, can alleviate and remove the potential for the 10 unit thing. In that, if at put in, the four of us are going boating today, mm-hmm. and if at put in, we decide that the goal for today is to just have fun and not worry about each other or getting better. We're just going to go out there and have fun, and we're going to make that our priority. Then that would decrease the chances of there being conflict later on. If, at the other hand, we decide that the priority today is safety and watching out for each other and all of those things, then when we got into a situation where one of us wasn't following that objective, we wouldn't have to be that guy. It would be easier to be, hey, let's remind ourselves of what our objective was today. So that's my 1-to-10 concept. Do you think that would make it any easier for you to go on a private trip if ahead of time everyone sort of agreed what Zach's role was going to be?
Nobody. Well, we can all agree on my role. That's fine. But we don't like how often we talked about this a while ago with like safety talks too for private boating. Maybe we should all have a little private boating safety talk every time we go boating. And I try doing it, and it's just weird. Like every time, even like when I'm meeting new people, it's like, hey guys, let's sit. Can we just have a quick talk? And like, what signals do you use? Let's watch out for that. And like, I do it sometimes, and it's weird, but I still try to do it. What you're saying is we have to like talk, like to set our goals if we go paddling.
What I'm wondering is if the one unit of weirdness mm-hmm. of having that safety talk or having that discussion at the beginning of the trip is worth it, because it might avoid 10 units of being pissed off or unsafe or frustrated with each other later on.
Is this trying to motivate me to do like this? I think this goes back to like one of my issues is when I go boating, I see people doing things that are unsafe or they shouldn't be on that line. And I think this is what you're referring to. And I'm like, do I really have to be that guy who like on my time off, like has hard talks with people? And what you're saying is I should do it because it's going to pay off dividends later.
Next mental angle, I want to explore ways that are going to make it easier for you to do that.
Okay.
For this one, I just want to introduce this 1-to-10 concept.
Okay.
To see what you think.
I'm going to hop in here for a second and say, this seems like the standard of setting expectations. Like this, it seems like a lot of what we're talking about here is just that classic on any trip with any group of people is making sure everyone's on the same page in terms of what are the expectations, what's going to happen. And like, even if you're inviting your friends over for dinner, you're trying to set some sort of expectations before they come over. What do I need to bring? Da, 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 da. What time is it? What you know, what am I supposed to wear? You know, there's all these expectations that need to be clarified beforehand with anything we do. So I think that Steve's saying makes a lot of sense. And I think one of the things about the 1 to 10 that we kind of dove into a little bit though is like there is a diminishing return at a certain point, right? There's still a calculus to it. If you talk for too long, you know, the first minute, I would say the first thing you say is the most helpful. The second you say is still pretty helpful, but less helpful than the first thing you discuss. And the third is less and less and less and less and less. And everything you say is less and less helpful. Because first of all, you're saying more and people are going to forget a lot of it. And you're just talking more and it's less important. So I like what Steve's saying, Jim. I think there's sense to it. It's like, but being selective about it, about what mountain are you going to die on? What's worth it? Yeah, Steve, this makes a lot of sense to me. I don't know what the problem is.
I don't like how the two of you are always on the same side. The show used to be me versus Aaron, and now it's me against the two of you. Did you guys have a pre-show meeting on how you're going to gang up on me during the class?
No.
We don't agree with each other?
It happens naturally.
I think prevention's good. I agree. I think prevention is good. I use the term go slow to go fast. I think communication is good. I think sharing with your feelings about the trip is really good. I think where I struggle I'm like, hey, let's all get together and talk about like, who knows the run, water levels are high. Let's just kind of run tight today. I'm feeling off. Like, can you guys keep an eye on me? Or I'm challenged today, or so-and-so is their first run. That's all great. I think the issue comes up when what's hard is when somebody is pushing harder than they should and you're worried about them, and having that talk is really hard. I think that's what I'm going at. And I think that I'd like to have that 1 minute talk with them and be like, hey, you know, it's just not fun. And then like, sometimes you tell people they're not ready to do a run and they go do it anyway and they crush it. And then you look kind of stupid. You're like, oh, maybe I was just like, shouldn't have said anything. You know, so I think.
But maybe what you shouldn't have said is that they're not ready to do that run. I mean, maybe you can figure out a softer way to present that opinion without being quite so definitive. And we'll get in. Maybe we can get into that.
And Zach, I think if we look at our viewers, they pretty much are agreeing with Steve and I.
She's great. One viewer, Courtney.
More than that. She's agreeing with Steve. Yeah. Yeah. But there's someone else that's done before.
Do a private trip check-ins before you get in the water, especially when you have a bear group. Yeah. I think a private trip check-in is good. I'm not saying it's something we should be doing. And like, if I'm going to go paddle after work with people, I don't know. If I went paddling, I probably wouldn't do it like in an after work paddle. I know everybody going, but if it's something difficult, I will probably have some sort of talk like, hey, who has a throw bag? Who has a first aid kit? Who's going to run lead today? What river signals do you guys use? I think that's a no brainer, right? But I think what's hard is, I think this came up with talking about mentors, right? Like, when do you take on that mentorship role? And being that mentor is really hard.
But isn't it easier to do proactively than retroactively? Like, isn't it easier to step up in that 1 minute pre-trip get together? We're going to go this way. We're going to go that way. Here's the water level. Hey guys, I'm not interested in being your mentor today. I just want to be, I'm on my day off. That's what I'm doing.
Wait, Zach, are you saying you don't like, I feel like Steve. Okay. We got to go back to the mentor thing here for a second. Do you think you can choose to be somebody's mentor without them choosing to want you as their mentor? Like Steve was my mentor for a long time. I chose Steve as my mentor. Steve didn't say, Aaron, I'm going to be your mentor. You know, he didn't go up and I'm going to mentor you.
You were my mentor.
What are you doing? Please. But you know what I mean, Zach? It's so I think you're talking about something different than you guys are talking about something different than mentoring. You're talking about, because a leading mentor is a different relationship. You're talking about, yeah, like leading, like mentoring is like, that's a different relationship. You're talking about leading and just like trying to help keep people safe. And like, I guess it is mentoring in a way. It's like, but it's unsolicited mentoring, I guess I would call it. It's like that's your struggles with someone who needs mentoring but doesn't realize it. It sounds like
I'm not having the struggle right now, just for the record. but I have in the past. Yeah. And like I know people have this struggle where like somebody is not boating well and everybody's talking about them behind their backs and like, oh, so and so sucks, and nobody's having that talk with them about how to improve. It's really easy in a commercial environment. It's easier because you're at work and there's like a hierarchy and you just do it. In the private boating world, I think it's really hard to do. I'm not saying it's impossible, and I'm not saying I don't do it. I'm just saying it's really hard to do and it's not fun. And it's not something I want to be doing on my time off. I'm not like, oh, good, I get to have a hard talk with somebody on my time off.
I think this is a great way to conclude today's mental angle. And I'm going to draw on something that Aaron taught me a long time ago. And he was my mentor.
You two are so cute together.
And we were talking about something else. It was sort of an outcome-based strategy. Let's call it like, what do you want the outcome of this interaction to be? Well, I'm going to sit down and Aaron would talk to him about his performance as an employee, or I'm going to sit down and talk to my friend about their performance on the river. Like, before you start that conversation, you want to know what the outcome is going to be. If before you start this day on the river, everyone agrees that the outcome should be this, I think those roles become much more easy to define. And if you do need to correct anyone's behavior, you can refer back to a unstressful moment at the beginning of the trip when everyone agreed that our goal for the day, today's outcome, was going to be this, and we're not moving towards that outcome because of these events. So we all agreed that this was our desired outcome. What do we need to do to shift our actions right now to keep moving towards that outcome? And I think it can be, and make it easier to make those adjustments later on if you've had that less stressful time at the beginning of the trip to sort of define that. That's where I'm going with this. And I think next session we can talk about having that moment. But it's still going to be a 1 to 10 German liberal arts ratio.
I'm with you. I think 1 to 10's a lot. I think it's 1 to 3.
Next week.
Can you do
one of those little graphs, the little diagrams like that guy sent us on the flipping the boat, and do some vector and do the, show me that it's going to be 1 to 10 or 1 to 3.
Do the engineering part of it.
Yeah, do the engineering. Engineer that out for me, will you?
Man, we got a hashtag going.
A hashtag. That's trending.
So let's sum this up. Do you want to sum it up for me? Because let me try to sum it up, what you're saying, and tell me if I'm right or wrong. You're saying before the trip, we should be communicating certain things with the group we're going with to set expectations and to set a good environment for everybody to boat in. And by doing that, we'll save potential anguish or problems when we're boating.
At a 1 to 10.
1 to 10 ratio.
1 to 10, come on.
Oh, I think if you really, over the week, I think if you really think about it, Zach, you'll recall all of those times, how much tension that was, how much angst that caused you in that moment. That is like, it's not just a time element. We're not like, move away from the, what are those called that you guys use? The measurements that are,
Are you talking about scientists?
Yeah.
You talking about Aaron and Vlad and I?
Yes.
You know, the engineers and physicists.
Yeah,
here.
You guys. Quantitative versus qualitative. Look at it from a qualitative standpoint.
Well, you're putting a number on it. You're making it quantitative by putting a number on it. You made it quantitative.
Totally agree, Becky.
Yeah. So I was trying to communicate with you guys. I was trying to reach my
audience. Oh, good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Reach
your audience. You're using math so that we can understand.
Thank you, Steve.
I just want, good.
Hold on. Okay. I want to take an aside. I'm with you. I agree. I think I'm a big fan of communication, preacher communication. I'm a big fan of go slow to go fast. Like, we go too fast, we make mistakes sometimes. But I think also, have you ever been in those pre-trip talks where you're just like, dude, when are we going to go boating? Like, why are we talking so much? This is insane.
Okay. I'm going to add that to the list of things to come back and talk about. Like, what's an appropriate amount of time? Or how can you then, if Aaron is going on and on and on and on and on and on and on, and we're past that payoff point, how I can steer him back towards, hey, it's time to go boating, without making it sound like I'm excluding him from the...
Well, Zach would just go get in his boat, push off, and start rafting downstream. That would be his, when we were 20, that would be your old technique when we were like 20 years old. And then we'd get upset with him. I mean, thank goodness Zach did that so we can actually get going. Remember those days, Zach?
Yeah, I would. I mean, I remember those days.
You'd be like, I'm going. I'd be like, good, we need to get this thing moving. And everyone would be all upset.
Absolutely. And there are times when you need to get it going.
I think there's a right amount of time. I think if it takes too long, 10 minutes prevention saves you 1 minute of recovery.
We're going to graph this out. There's a point of diminishing returns. There's a point of negative return.
There's a point of negative returns.
Yep.
Where things get bad.
Yep. We've all been there, sure. And we're going to avoid those.
Heidi asks, what do you think of a debriefing at the end of every trip?
Absolutely. 100%.
I'm going to debrief every commercial trip for sure.
And I would say that debrief is the foundation for the beginning of the next trip. Mm-hmm. That the debrief, that the value of the debrief is not necessarily to figure out what happened or what went wrong or what went right, but it is to ensure that those things continue to happen or don't happen.
Is the debrief...
You're doing it at a time when it is, when there's no stress. We all perform better. We all think better when we're not under stress.
That's what I was going to ask. Is the debrief like at takeout? Like, hey, we get done before we load our boats in the car, should we debrief? Is it like at the bar that evening? Is it a few days later on a Zoom call?
I think it would depend on what the energy in that moment was. Sometimes it might need to wait a little while to do it. I've driving back from Rogue River trips or driving back from Tuolumne trips. Everybody's in the truck. Common on a commercial trip for a debrief to sort of take place during that time. There have been times when I have been scared to death to have that debrief at that moment because the person driving was a subject to some of the things that were being discussed, and that is not a good time to have it. Right? I mean, it can be an emotional thing. So I think you have to find the right setting for it. I think doing it, making a point of trying to do it, is what we're getting at here. Private trip, commercial trip, two people going kayaking for one day, 25 people going for 3 weeks in the Grand Canyon. I think if we're talking about a 3 week Grand Canyon trip, we're talking about multiple debriefs throughout the trip.
I mean, when my Grand Canyon trip ended, was over, the one I did in the fall, there was no reason to debrief. I wasn't going to probably bow these people maybe ever again. Like, I had nothing to debrief at all. But if I did, I was just going to be like, you know what? This actually fits in my question better. Let's say you do a Grand Canyon trip. And during that trip, somebody, like, it wasn't a major safety thing, but they kind of messed up a bunch of things. And you can help them by talking to them. During the trip, or after the trip, you could like
sure, yeah.
Let's say after the trip, not even during. Let's say after. Do you after the trip, if you're never to see them again, never boat with them again, do you have a responsibility to say, hey, I just boated with you for 18 days. I really feel like you should do this differently when you boat in the future, or can you just walk away?
I think that's going to be a personal decision. Let's add that to our list of things to discuss at another time.
Or does this mainly apply to people you're regularly boating with?
It depends. It depends.
Well, I think it's if you're going to go boating with them again.
Okay.
And it depends on the issue.
You may decide you're not going to go boating with them again as a group. But during that Grand Canyon trip, every night, you are going to go bowling with those people again the next day. Mm-hmm. So a mid-trip debrief every 3 nights, every 4 nights, we're going to debrief, I think is helpful. And I would use my 1-to-10 ratio here to say that if we bring that concept into the trip at the beginning, hey, I think it's going to be helpful for us to have check-in every third or fourth night. We're all just going to get together and talk about a few things. But that's a much easier time to bring it up than on night four, when now there are things that you have to bring up. And all of a sudden you're introducing a debrief into the middle of the trip that no one thought was coming, and that everyone then becomes anxious about and defensive about.
Are you calling a debrief?
Check in, story time. I like the story time.
I mean, you can make it super casual too. You can just be like rolling up the boats at the end of the day, or at the end of the day, you're unloading. You're like, dude, that was sick. Running Granite today, so fun. Hey, Zach, I really appreciate, man, made me feel so comfortable how close you ran behind me today. Thank you so much for doing that.
Is this,
and maybe I give you that compliment because Steve's doing a terrible job of front at running close, but I want him to hear it. But I'm saying, hey, thanks for running so close. It made me feel really comfortable. And I really appreciate that.
I have questions. So hold on. Is this the responsibility of the trip leader to hold these story times? Or can like anybody be like, hey guys, I feel like having a nice chat tonight.
Oh God, I'm not going on that trip. I'm not going on that trip.
That's what I'm getting at. Like,
no, but I don't think it has to be that structured.
Well, Steve's saying it should be structured. He's saying do it every couple of days.
Well, have conversations.
And I think if the person who wants to have the conversation knows that they are coming, they won't feel a need to call an impromptu one, ad hoc one, emergency one. They can say, oh, well, I know we're going to have this discussion. We had one 3 nights ago. We'll probably have one in the next couple of nights. Wait till it happens. If they feel like they need one, maybe they go to the trip leader and say, hey, I think we should get together and tell some stories tonight.
Everybody discussion or just the one-on-one discussion? Or does it depend on the situation?
I think you have a great point there, Zach. I think in general, if you're going to give someone something negative, you don't do it in front of the group. Depending on what it is. If you're going to call somebody out, if I'm going to call Zach out for his boat spacing, it'd be like, hey, you know, I'd probably do that off to the side. You know?
So and, now, I think, now we're, yeah, and now we're getting...
But then the other thing...
Now we're getting, like, boat spacing is just... We're moving from, we're moving away from prevention talks into feedback.
No, that is a prevention talk. Boat spacing is prevention. It's preventing stuff. The other thing I would say is if you give people positives, like when I say, Zach, hey, great job with your boat spacing, you know, really appreciate it. Then it's easier later on to be like, hey, do you mind running this way with me? I'm more comfortable with it. Or having a conversation about like, how do you usually approach, you know, how do you like to approach boat spacing on this rapid? Or how do you like to approach safety on this rapid or something like that? And then I go back to it, and I've said this before, and I'll say again, I think it's best to not give critical feedback at the end of the day. I think it's best to keep it positive as much as possible and wait till the next opportunity to do something different and have a conversation that morning. Hey, we're going to run this rapid. Last time this happened, can we try doing it this way this time? Something like that, where you're giving people an opportunity to perform, not telling them they sucked last time. And so they're sitting on that, if that makes any sense.
It makes sense. I mean, this is all we've talked about feedback a lot in previous shows about how to give good feedback, how to accept good feedback. I think what Steve's getting to, like, I think what I expressed last week was, hey, it's not fun to have hard discussions with people about how they can improve. It's not a fun thing to do.
But it's not fun boating with people if you feel the need to have that conversation with them. It's not fun boating with those people. And that's his point. The 1 minute of conversation saves you 10 units of frustration with
if
them
you're
on the water.
If you're going to boat with them again.
And if you're on a Grand Canyon trip, you're going to boat with them again.
Let's just say it's just like a different trip. Like you're like, I think the struggle is, I think it's hard to chat with people, say, hey, you're not as good as you think you are. And like, you need to practice these things before you make this big step.
That's because no one's good enough. No one meets the Zach standard. That's not true.
I think it's a very difficult thing to
do. Because I don't want to steal future material.
I have one more thing. I think this is, I've been thinking about this one a little bit, actually. Todd has brought up a good one.
Continue learning and progressing.
Because I've been thinking about this a lot, because some days... Go ahead, Aaron. I'll say what I think.
I was going to say, yeah, I think he's right that, you know, you're not always going to be the strongest link, and some days you're going to be a weaker link and you're going to need help. But also, I hope that if people think I shouldn't be doing something, they let me know it and don't just like, yeah, let's go. And be like, dude, this is not a good idea for you, man. Like, I hope people will tell me that, you know.
Tell you that.
Yeah. If they think it's not good for me. Like, I hope that. And so, you know, I agree with the weakest link thing. But if I'm too weak of a link and it's not appropriate for me to be there, it's like, hey, we're not comfortable going with you on this today. Okay. Yeah, it sucks, but I'll be upset. But when I'm driving home, I'll be like, oh, okay.
So I've had to do that a lot. Be like, hey, today you shouldn't go today. Like this, you need to not go today. We're going to go, but based on my pathing with you, you shouldn't go. And it's not fun. But because I'm going to be there, I don't want to deal with the issues that they have. But I've been thinking about this one a lot. I think this the other discussion we're having going in circles, and I think we all agree, but sort of like flipping on a raft or flipping on shore. We all agree, but we're like, there's two sides to the story a little bit. There's, I think, sometimes, right? What do you mean there's not two sides to the story? I think with flipping the boat, I agree with you guys.
Two sides, but only one of them is right. Okay, go ahead.
I know. We know. We already know there needs to be a hat that says hashtag Steve is right. I mean, so we have you here. And
Vlad, you know, I wore this. I didn't know Vlad was going to be on with us today, but this is our unifying Zach, Aaron, and me. This is right.
What's that? I don't even know what that hat is.
The Aaron Cavanello hat? AC Aaron? Is that the Aaron Cavanello hat?
That's the UC Davis Cal Aggies hat.
Oh, really? Right? Did they change the logo? Do you notice my hat, Steve?
I did notice that, and it's funny. I'll tell you, I saw Tyler went the other day, and we almost did this show, me at the Oars office.
Oh, that would have been awesome.
In Angels Camp. But I said, no, I'd be offensive to Zach if he saw that I had a Oars sponsor, and he didn't. And now you've won up to me. So well played.
Yep. Thank you. So I want to go back to Todd's comment really quick. Just think about, I think that the flipping boats, it's a good discussion and things come out of it. And we like have good discussion and we have two sides, but I think we'll agree flipping the boats in the middle of the current is generally more effective and a better way to go. Mm-hmm. I'm with you guys on that. I think there's two sides though. I think Steve, you're right. Communication is usually always good. It's just hard sometimes.
Absolutely.
It's hard. And communication. There's
ways to make it easier.
And my side of it is like, I'm with you 100%. Communication is great if it's done effectively. But sometimes you have to have tough talks and you don't, there's no benefit to you because you're not going to vote this person ever again. Or you rarely vote with them. It doesn't affect your safety. So you're like, you know what? Do I really need to talk to them? It doesn't affect me. Do I have a responsibility to have this talk to them? It's tough. I'm just going to say it's tough. I think we're being like, those are two discussions. I think they're fun discussions, but we're like, we go in circles. Todd makes me think about my role on trips when I'm kayaking. Cause I've been kayaking off and on the past couple of weeks. Like some days I invited somebody to do a run they've never done. And I'm their best friend the whole time. I'm like, hey, here's how you get to put in. Here's what the run is. Follow my lines. If you want to, if you don't, go do your own thing. Cool. But I'm here to tell you lines. I'll check in with them. Hey, how you feeling? If they swim, I'm going to be the person to rescue them. I'm there. I've signed up for that day. Some days I go and I'm super comfortable on the run, but I didn't organize it. I'm not in charge. I just want to goof off. I want to splat on rocks, play around, goof off. I'll help if I need to, but I'm not there to like be a leader or a mentor. I'm just there to go have fun. And I'm there for myself for personal reasons. I'll look after everybody and I want them to look after me, but I'm not a safest girl that day. And some days I'm at my limits of boating. And I need people around me who can provide that role to me. So like some days I'm going to go do a run that's like, I'm challenged a lot. And I want to be surrounded by those people who provide that service to me. And at the end of the day, you know, I might say, hey, what can I work on? But if I roll and swim and cause a problem, I know I caused that problem. I don't need them to be like, hey, by the way, you shouldn't come here again. Like, I knew that. So I think a really cool talk that I'd be interested in having more, I've been thinking about this a lot, is like, what role are you plugging into that day? And then within the group, we get looking at the group and making sure like different roles in the group, like there are different roles in a group. There's a leader, there's people who are there to look out for each other. There's people who are like the weakest link. So like the dynamics of that is super interesting to me.
I'm adding that to my
topic. Things. Okay. It's Thomas. I'd like to debrief how Steve. Yeah. Yep. I'm with you. I usually put it on YouTube, Thomas. Oh, we got to go Ags. Wait, Paul, were you a Davis guy too? Don't you sell it to those who will be voting with him to help?
I'm with Scott on this one.
Wait, yeah. Hey, do we have something to give away this week, Zach?
Yeah. Do you want?
Is this too easy a question? What is the mascot for UC Davis?
They can just Google it.
I don't know that they'll get the right answer.
Yeah, I'm not sure if they get
the right Google answer. Just Google it. If you have a trivia question, I have prizes. One prize we could give away, by the way, is Vlad's book.
Vlad.
By the way, Vlad is just supervising us right now. And at any moment, he may come in and tell us what the correct answer is. I mean, think about this. Vlad led expeditions throughout the Soviet Union, like 30-day expeditions. Vlad, are you still there? I think he's just surfing the web.
I'm still here.
Vladimir.
Yeah. Vladimir.
What? Are you falling asleep? We usually, people that watch our show.
No, it's just. I just remember a proverb. Do you remember what is sister of talent?
Sister of talent?
It's ability to express yourself short. Not wait, talk say that too
again.
Much.
Say that again.
He said, Vladimir.
It's many famous people told the same thing, that ability to express yourself briefly, sister of talent.
So, Vlad, your internet's kind of not great, so we don't hear all of it. I think I heard the sister of talent is not talk too much.
Very close, yes.
Very close, okay. We'll have to look that up as part of our thing. Well, Paul, that's cool. I didn't know you were also an Aggie. Hey, by the way, is that the correct answer?
What's the correct answer, Aggie?
No, it's a UC Davis mascot. Isn't that the answer?
Yeah, the Mustangs.
I think a better question would be the average. What year is the average of the three of our years of attendance? Like,
I don't know the answer to that.
I know we could, but no one does. They can't Google that one.
What's the average number of years we spent at UC Davis studying?
No. Our graduation years.
Oh, I think I like the average undergraduate we spent studying at Davis. That would be funny.
Aren't you still enrolled, Aaron?
Yeah.
I still wake up at times thinking I'm not sure if I have my degree yet or not. Yeah.
Oh, that assignment is
so
still
they're going to call me and be like, hey, you didn't finish. Yeah.
I think Scott's, I'm going to change the subject, guys, back to the show. I think Scott's question kind of gets at the root of my issue I brought up last week. And I think this is where I get stuck sometimes because I don't know the answer to this. I don't know if you owe it to them. You owe it to the other people. I mean, this is where, like when I go boating, I'm talking about private boating, out for fun with friends. I see all the time, everywhere, things that could be better. Like that boat spacing is off. That person shouldn't have caught that eddy. That the way they threw that throw bag was wrong. It's nonstop. I can't sit there and be nitpicky all the time with everybody. And it would annoy everybody. And I'm probably wrong about, I would say most of what I'm going to tell people could be wrong. Right. I could be like, hey, maybe you shouldn't have caught the eddy. And they're like, well, actually I should have because blah, blah, blah. So I think it's
not your responsibility. If people are choosing to go out and do these activities, that's their choice. And like if they ask, that's a whole one thing.
Yeah.
And if it's going to endanger the trip that you're part of, that's something else, but it's not your responsibility. Like I would never say it's your responsibility, but I would say you don't owe them. Yeah.
It's just because
it's something you could do if you wanted to, but there's people who are bad drivers out there who really drive terribly. Do you let them know that they don't drive well? You know, it's like, like talk to them about it, not just give them a little sign while you're driving by.
I don't know the answer to this question. I mean, if you guys all said, hey, Zach, yeah, it's a responsibility to like do it, I would start doing it, I guess. But I mean, that's when I teach classes. So this is, right, we started doing classes like whitewater classes. It's because I would go boating with people and I'd be like, in California, I feel like the level of boating is safety is much higher. I think people in California have like run tighter. They run a little bit more responsibly. I feel that's that way. When I moved to Oregon, things were way looser. I was like, man, people don't pay attention to boat spacing, boat order, downstream safety. There's just way more solo boating here. And there's just not like, I don't know. I thought California was just tighter. That's the one way to put it. And we started the classes, the education classes we do, because I didn't want to, out boating, I don't want to be all the time nitpicking people. I don't think they want that either. But if somebody chose to pay money to be nitpicked, I'll do it. Okay. And I enjoy doing it.
Zach, what if you recognize that your expertise has a value and that it would be beneficial to the world in general if you made that expertise, if you shared that value with other people, only by saying to those people, what would happen if in that moment where you saw something that you weren't comfortable with, or after that moment, you approached that person and said, hey, I've been doing this a long time. I've studied it. I've gone to school for it.
I hate prefacing. One of my goals in life is never preface the discussion of why, like with my resume. Like, hey, like it's just people that say, hey, I've done the middle fork 15 times. Let me tell you how to blah, blah, blah.
That's not what I was going to say.
I don't want to be that person.
That's not what I was going to say.
Yeah.
I've done the middle fork 15 times. Would you like any advice?
But nobody says
anything
no
I can
that.
Say. Are you interested in how I learned to run that rapid?
Nobody ever, like you asked, like if you phrase it that way, hey, Steve, I've been in the middle fork 15 times. Would you like some advice for me how to run that rapid? Would you ever say, no, I'm good? No, I'm good. The answer to that is always yes. Nobody ever's, they don't want to hear it, but they're not going to say no. Nobody's going to say no to that.
But by giving them the power,
you didn't
of accepting your wisdom.
You made them accept your wisdom. When you ask somebody, can I give you advice? Nobody ever says no to that.
I would disagree. I would disagree.
Have you has someone ever done that with you, Steve?
I haven't thought about this enough to know if there were, it is something I'd written down, like asking permission when you're supposed to ask permission before you give someone first aid, and that you are obligated under those circumstances
to provide
service. So this would be just sort of that same sort of courtesy. I'm wondering if it would change your feelings about if they say, no, I don't really care. then you're done. No, you don't have
nobody says that. It's so impolite.
What?
To say
I can get off.
Is there a polite way to say it?
To say no.
No, to offer the value of your expertise. And even if they say, yeah, I want to hear what you have to say, doesn't that then eliminate all of your self-consciousness about helping someone or offering advice or telling someone what you think or don't think? Like they've given you permission to tell them. That's all. I think that's where your struggle comes from. I think that's where all of our struggles come from is how do we get past that perception of feeling like we're intruding on someone else's joy or moment.
I think that's a good way to put it. Like, I do feel like I'm intruding on their joy in their moment.
But if you ask them permission, mm-hmm. can't you enhance their joy?
I tell you my other issue.
They're dying for that.
I gotta go, guys. I gotta run. Sorry.
All right, there.
Hey, you're my support.
Yeah, you're on your own now, Steve. I guess you.
I gotta go. I gotta go too. My baby. My 1-year-old is crying.
Yeah, my 1-year-old is crying. Exactly. Yeah.
See, Aaron.
I think I'm with you on this.
We're gonna talk about it. Let's. I don't know if you have other. I think we've beat this right now.
We have beat it. And just we have some comments. Let's get to comments, and we'll be done with the show for the day. But I want to say, like, I think I enjoy this discussion, and I get animated about it. I'm fired about it because I'm in these positions a lot.
I know.
And
it's very, very difficult.
And I do my best to do it well. But there's also an insecurity that maybe my advice is wrong. Like, man, I have been doing this a long time. And I don't understand. Maybe I'm going to give somebody advice and then be like, oh, man, that guy, what an idiot. You know, like.
Okay, we'll talk about how to give advice.
Because you can, and you can give wrong advice. People, like. Somebody can run a rapid and they can say, hey, I think you should go left there. And it turns out you should have gone right there. Like that's happened to me. Like I'm like, hey, I think you should take this line. And I've given people the wrong line before. And so if I'm like, hey, I think you should get this, do this thing. Like it could be wrong. So it's always in the back of my head that I could be giving wrong advice. So not only am I intruding on them, I'm intruding on them on potentially wrong advice.
Yeah, we'll figure out ways to do that.
A couple of good comments. This is thanks, Becky. Don't walk away regretting keeping your mouth shut. Yeah. It's more, it would not have expectation. Yeah. Oh, look, Steve. Lies happen about. A subtext of the constant rehashing of lines and rapids Boder constantly engage in. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to close the show down, but don't go anywhere, you two. After the show's over, we'll have a final talk. So don't worry. Thank you, everybody, for watching. Don't forget to like and subscribe. Thank you for all the members, and we'll see you next week.